This week's episode of War Rocket Ajax is brought to you by Loot Crate. Head on over to lootcrate.com/warrocketajax and use the coupon code WarRocketAjax to save $3 off a new subscription.
Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
Welcome to War Rocket Ajax. This is the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast, and we are your hosts. My name is Chris Sims, and with me as always is Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, how are you doing tonight, sir?
I am feeling okay. I'm feeling just fine. I am feeling free. I have freedom. Chris, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling like all of those disturbingly long pauses that I just heard in that little monologue of yours are not going to be in the final cut of this show.
I think that's true.
Oh, we've got a great show for everybody this week. We're going to be talking to one of my faves, one of my favorite people and favorite writers around. Kelly Thompson is going to be here talking to us about Gem and the Holograms, as well as her upcoming stuff like Mega Princess and Star Wars Annual Number 2.
That's right. It's going to be a lot of fun to talk to Kelly. We've had her on the show a couple times before, and she's always great to have on, so we're glad to have her back. But, Chris, before we get to the interview, we've got some business to take care of, so let's talk really quickly about Patreon for a minute.
Patreon is how people can support us directly if they want to head over to patreon.com/warrocketajax and kick in as little as a dollar a month to help us keep the lights on and pay those gimmicks they keep sending in the mail called bills.
That's right, and we're going to thank our newest Patreon supporters, people who have kicked in a dollar or more every month to help us out. The first one we have is the One Shot Network.
Oh, love those folks. Thank you, One Shot Network.
The people behind some of our favorite podcasts.
That's them. People behind Campaign, the people behind One Shot, Kat and James. They've been on the show. If you haven't heard their episode's a good one. And gave the world the @NotMandalorian Twitter accounts. That's right, there's two of them.
Patrick Gertner.
Thank you, Patrick, so much.
Luke Dunn.
Thank you, Luke. Next time you see me, here's a high five.
And Xavier Files.
Xavier Files, a great website and a great Twitter account that asks us a lot of cool questions. Latest tweet from Xavier Files is asking us if we're aware of who Stone Cold HCC is following, which is my favorite thing on the internet right now.
Just FYI for listeners, Stone Cold HCC is following a different Chris Sims and Matt Wilson.
Brilliant.
If you would like to help us out on Patreon, you can do so by going to patreon.com/warrocketajax and, kick in a dollar if that's all you can do, a little more if you feel like doing more. If you can't do anything at all, that's okay. We will still be providing the show on iTunes and other podcast apps totally for free every single week. But if you do kick in some stuff on Patreon, you get bonus stuff that nobody else gets. So keep that in mind. All right, Chris, now that we've done some Patreon talk, let's do some checks and wrecks.
Let's do it. So come on and tickety-tack
yourself before you wreck yourself. Chris, what are you checking in with this week?
I guess we sort of have the mutual check of having just hung out together
all
weekend.
That's right. We spent the weekend at your new place in Durham. It is very nice. I'm very impressed with your new place to live. We watched NXT TakeOver. We watched SummerSlam. We went to Costco. We went to the co-op and had pancakes.
We did go to the co-op and have pancakes and had a lot of real good Sunday morning people watching.
Yes, we did. It was a great weekend. I had a lot of fun.
I am too. I had an absolute blast. Aiden and I were so happy that you and Marlene made it over. We did not record a second of bonus content.
No, we did not.
We were together for 72 hours.
I think the idea was that we might record something in the aftermath of SummerSlam. But yes. Then SummerSlam was 6 hours long.
It was 6 fucking hours long, which is here it is, folks. If you don't watch wrestling and you're like, what is too much pro wrestling for these two guys? That's too much wrestling. That is it. We hit the limit halfway through that show.
Yeah. Yeah, we were pretty burned out on it right after the John Cena AJ Styles match, which is I think what also happened to the live crowd.
Yes.
And maybe everybody else watching.
The match order on that show is bananas.
Very weird.
It ended up being such a weird show because of how they, not even the pacing, because the matches themselves were not like especially long matches. Like the match order, like Cena and Styles going in the middle of the show and having like a half hour barn burner, the women's title match being on like second. It was really weird. It's a very, very weird show. And I think by the end of it, because we had literally been watching it for 5.5 hours, we just wanted to go to bed. Like, we were tired.
Yeah.
Actually, what I wanted to do was then watch more wrestling. So we went through looking at all the thumbnails for all the episodes of Monday Nitro.
Well, that's what we did after TakeOver. After SummerSlam, we went through a primer on blood in wrestling.
Yes.
Going back and seeing some of the biggest blood moments, because, and this is probably what we would have talked about if we'd have recorded bonus content after SummerSlam, we would have talked about Randy Orton getting his head busted open by Brock Lesnar and bleeding all over the ring, and whether or not we thought it was a blade job or hard way, whether that was the planned finish or not, and all that has come to light since.
Yes. Suffice to say, it was a very fun weekend, but in terms of wrestling, it was an exhausting one.
Yes.
Which is a weird thing to say, because next weekend I'm going to be at King of Trios. And King of Trios is the kind of, it's another one of those things where it's like, you know, you go watch the wrestling show, and then you go back to the hotel, and all your friends hang out, and you just turn on the WWE Network and watch Nitro, or whatever. So it's weird to have so definitely hit a hard limit of how much wrestling I can take. That being a mutual check, I have a check of my own that I'd like to talk about. I'm going on a cruise.
Yes.
In January.
Yeah, that's news that happened this week.
I'm excited. I'm really looking forward to this. What's happening is, it's called Fan2Sea, F-A-N, the number 2, S-E-A. And it's essentially, you know, I'm sure you've all out there, you've heard of the theme cruises that people go on. There's, you know, like the Jonathan Colton cruise that has a lot of the, like, comedians that we like. There's, like, the Max Fun cruise that they do, like my brother and me on a boat. Me in a boat would be a good name for that episode. But this is essentially a Comic-Con that takes place on a cruise ship for 4 days as it goes from Tampa to, I think, Key West, and then to Cozumel and back. And the way that this happened was that they're getting Jordan White, who is my editor at Marvel. He edits the Deadpool and Star Wars books. They got in touch with him and asked him if he wanted to go on the cruise. And then they found out that in addition to comics, he does sailor business with me. And they were like, oh, well, we're doing some live podcasts on the cruise. Will you do sailor business? And Jordan said, well, I can't really do that without Chris. And so they're like, that's fine. We'll bring him too. So I'm going to go on a cruise where I'll be on a boat for 4 days. And I will appear at a Marvel Comics panel and at a live sailor business with Jordan. And then I will have the other 3 days and 22 hours to explore a boat. And I'm so excited. Now, Matt, you, your wife, and my girlfriend are very opposed to cruises.
Yeah. I don't know if it was ever in the offing to also do a Warrock and Ajax on the cruise. Maybe not. I'm not a name. But if it had been, it wouldn't have happened. you'll bury me in the ground before you put me on a cruise ship.
And I was so glad because we actually just recorded like a bonus episode of Sailor Business, and we had Annie Creighton from the Jim Jam, a podcast that you're going to be hearing about a little bit later. Purely by coincidence, it turns out that she's been on like 5 or 6 cruises in her life. And so I was actually able to talk to someone like Jordan's never been on one. So he's kind of looking forward to it, but he doesn't have experience. And I've got friends who have been on cruises. Josh Kroc, who letters a bunch of me and Chad's comics, has been on cruises before. But this is the first person I've actually talked to about it who's been on one, because I was just – I was cruising through a sea of negativity this weekend is what happened.
Yeah, I can't do the cruise thing. I it's weird to me that there's this whole trend now of like fan cruises or like the Joko cruise. I'm more than happy for the people who go out there and do them and have fun, but you'll have to drag me onto one of those fucking boats.
I don't understand. I mean, I do kind of understand because I'm afraid of airplanes. I'm genuinely, like, this is legit. I am genuinely looking forward to it, partially because, and I also tell this story on Sailor Business, so excuse me if you've had to hear it twice. I'm genuinely fascinated by usage of small spaces. Like, when you have a defined, limited amount of space, whether it's an apartment in Tokyo or an apartment in Manhattan or airports and airplanes, like the thing I find fascinating is how space is used and how like things are adapted to fit that. Cause I think that's really, really interesting. And so like I started just like talking to the dude who was talking to me about this cruise, and he was like, yeah, you know, I bet they can give you a tour of the boat. And so I'm like stoked. I want to find out all about everything. If you're curious about it, I think you can find it at Fan2CCruise on Twitter or at fan2c.com. They've announced from the Marvel side, it's a bunch of people. Me, Scott Koblish, who drew the X-Men 92 miniseries. Mark Waid is going to be there. Charles Soule is going to be there. Riley Brown. There's also a bunch of people coming from DC, like Snyder is going to be on there. Tim Sale, I think, is going to be there. Andy Kubert, Clay Mann, Klaus Janson, Sean Murphy. So a lot of Batman people are going to be there. So I'm going to have a real good time, I think. Definitely check that out. If you're planning on going to this cruise, then I'm sure we will run into each other on this boat. So I'm pretty excited about it. Matt, what's your check this week?
My check is, if you've been following me on, if you do follow me on Instagram or Twitter, you maybe saw that the night before we're recording this, so that would be Wednesday night, I tweeted and Instagrammed a photo of the title page of my book, which I have now finished the first draft of. We did it, everybody. We did it. The words are written. Now I just have to spend the next month editing the damn thing. That's probably going to be an emotional experience that I don't necessarily want to have to go through, but it's got to be done. And then I could turn in a manuscript. And then sometime next year there will be a book. So for those of you who are excited about there being a new book from me, which, as I've mentioned before, is quite different from my other two books. I feel more invested in this one than the other two. If you're excited about that, take heart, because I did actually finish writing it, and it will be in by deadline so it can be published at the appropriate time. If you're sick of me talking about my stupid book, you don't ever have to hear me say that I'm still writing it. Because it's written. I will probably continue to talk about it as I edit it and we go through the process of getting it published next year. But the writing is complete. One thing I tweeted out last night is all that space that I was using in my brain to think of what to write next is now occupied by just rampant second guessing of everything I did. So that's fun. I am mostly happy with how things turned out, and after an edit, I think I'll be pretty satisfied with the book as it is.
I was really excited to see that picture because, as you know, when I was unpacking all my books, I found my copy of the original King Oblivion PhD book, Hate You Forever.
The Supervillain Handbook when it had a different title.
Yeah. So I'm excited for, I would say, the defining trilogy of our generation.
Yes.
To conclude.
Yes. Finally, it's happening. Finally, we have reached the heights. We have come to the end of the trilogy. So I hope, you know, people are excited about it. I'm happy to have finished writing it. And yeah, there'll be a book next year, everybody. Hooray.
I'm stoked.
All right, Chris, those are our checks. Let's make some quick recommendations. What do you have to recommend?
My recommendation is going to be a podcast that I've been listening to for a while now, but I don't think I've ever recommended it. It is a very well-known podcast, I think, so you may not even need the recommendation. But it's You Must Remember This, which is a podcast, as they say on every episode, about the secret and or forgotten history of Hollywood's first century. It's really enjoyable. It's done by a woman named Karina Longworth, who writes, records, and edits every episode of the show. And she just really kind of focuses on a certain aspect of old Hollywood and really kind of goes through it in depth. There's like, it's broken into really long themed series. So there's one on what movie stars did during wartime that's really interesting and really interestingly laid out. I'm actually currently listening to the one on Charles Manson, which may surprise people because I hate things that scare me and I hate true crime. But I decided that it was probably going to be interesting enough to keep me listening without being too worried. And again, she really presents it in an interesting and fascinating way. I know that's probably a little bit of a downer for your jokey joke show about comic books and pro wrestling, but if you are interested in old Hollywood stuff and finding out more about it, definitely check out You Must Remember This. There's a lot of really, really great series that go even beyond just those two. I think there's just one about MGM and how they had the kind of a star-making factory going. The current series is called 6 Degrees of Joan Crawford. There's a 16-part series about The Blacklist, which is really interesting stuff. So give it a listen. It's interesting stuff. Matt, what is your recommendation this week?
My recommendation is also a podcast, and you know, I think it's part of the Warrock and Ajax drinking game if we reveal our political leanings on the show. I'm not going to do that, but I am going to recommend a political podcast. And it's the new-ish New York Times political podcast called The Run-Up. I'm recommending it for a couple different reasons. The main reason is I just think that it's a really interesting look that kind of takes a step back from the horse race and the dogfight of election year politics and tries to look at the bigger picture of things at times. There's a really interesting episode, for example, about the base of support for Donald Trump and why, you know, the people who are supporting Donald Trump support him. And it's not just the typical, you know, economic narrative or narrative about, you know, prejudices or whatever. It kind of looks really deep at these, you know, these people in these particular regions of the country and where they are. They talk to an author who has written extensively about, you know, these sort of, you know, white poor communities and who comes from that kind of a community, I believe in West Virginia. And so there's a lot of interesting insight there. Then there's another episode that's really interesting that kind of digs into the idea of like why people distrust Hillary Clinton, like why people dislike and distrust Hillary Clinton. And that's really interesting. So I kind of like that aspect of it where it's not just, you know, a political podcast where it's like, okay, what did the candidate say this week? It's more kind of breaking off big questions and topics and examining them and interviewing people who have a lot of like really good insight into this stuff. Also, the host of the New York Times run-up podcast is a guy I have met whose name is Michael Barbaro. I met him back when I was in journalism school covering the Maryland State Legislature. When I was covering the Maryland State Legislature for grad school, there was a big issue that came up at the end of the session. And different reporters from different publications showed up, including the New York Times. And Michael Barbaro was one of them. And so I met him in the Maryland State Legislature. And now I'm listening to this podcast that he hosts. It's interesting how weird things like that happen. But besides that point, which is a weird side point, I just think that it's a really interesting look at sort of the bigger picture topics of the election, and that's the kind of stuff that really interests and fascinates me more than just kind of the head-to-head, what are the polls saying today stuff. I like those deeper dives. So if you're into that as well, then I would absolutely recommend checking out that podcast. All right, Chris, those are our recommendations. It's time to talk about some comics. Chris, I think we should probably start with Detective Comics number 939. Now, when we talked about the first issue of this new take on Detective Comics, you expressed a particular fear of something that might happen, and it seems to be the thing that is happening.
Yeah, well, it is, but it's happening in a way that is more interesting than the way that I feared it would happen. Which is that the thing I was afraid of was that this would be the story that breaks up Kate Kane and her dad, right? That they would, her dad would become an enemy,
right?
Which is exactly what happened,
right?
But there's also this storyline kind of running through it about the League of Shadows and whether or not it exists, and the idea of this thing being something Batman has dismissed as a legend that the League of Assassins uses to sort of cover its tracks, and whether it's for real, and whether Kate Kane's dad knew about it and his concerns are well-founded and legit, which kind of seems like it's going to turn out to be the case, or if he's been taken in. There's a lot of really interesting stuff going on. That it's not just Kate Kane's dad turning around and going, I've been evil all along, which is kind of what I was afraid of.
Yeah, it's a lot fuzzier than that. It's Kate Kane's dad possibly going too far to deal with what he sees as a very direct and immediate threat.
Yeah, well, it's the question, it's Kate Kane's dad being a soldier in a world of superheroes, and I really like that. I really like that this is a book that's kind of examining the question, because as you know, I mean, we've talked about it before, like, I like it when there's a line between soldier and superhero.
Yeah.
Even when it's somebody like Captain America, you've got a costume, you've got a code name, you are a superhero and you abide by superhero rules. And the whole idea of Kate's dad literally militarizing Batman, you know, taking the idea of Batman and being like, oh, but what if we had a platoon of him? What if we had, 100 Batmans to protect us? And it kind of going bad, but not in the way that you think. It's a really, really clever story. Detective's the stuff, man. It's really great.
Yeah, and aside from those kind of like big questions, every issue has had some really good character moments.
Yes.
But I feel like this issue in particular there's a really good Clayface moment.
That Clayface moment is going to be you are going to see that on Tumblr for like three or four years.
Oh yeah. There's a lot of great Tim Drake stuff in here. In a lot of ways, this is a Tim Drake showcase, right? Like he's the one who is, facing down the big threat and has kind of brought it on himself at the end of the issue.
I talked to Tynion about Tim Drake because I love Tim Drake. We love Tim Drake.
Uh-huh.
But, like, Tim Drake is his favorite character. like his favorite comics character. And so I was kind of waiting for this big Tim Drake spotlight, and I love how much danger is set up, because I know that Tim Drake is James Tynion's favorite character, so I don't think he's going to kill him. But also, there's another Robin running around, and then there's another Robin running around, because there's Damian and there's Duke Thomas, who's not Robin anymore, but is something different in All-Star Batman. This entire issue and the entire build-up to this issue for Tim Drake has basically been Tim going, yeah, I'm 2 days away from retirement.
Yeah, more or less, because he's going to go off to college.
He's like, yeah, I'm going to be a full-time college student, not a part-time vigilante. So I love the amount of danger that's in here for Tim Drake, even in a, like, when I don't think he's really in danger, which is the magic of comics. This is the best book coming out of the Rebirth era. And I don't say that lightly, because I think there's a lot of really fun stuff, but man, oh man, Detective is choice.
And just before we wrap up, let's take a second just to talk about how amazing of a job the art team is doing on this book.
Yes.
Amber Ferreria, Eddie Barrows. This book looks so good. I think this art team's doing a really excellent job. The way that it's, you know, kind of putting the painted look and the drawn look together, the panel designs, all that stuff. I just think they're doing really excellent work on this book.
Yeah, it's fantastic stuff.
Moving on really quickly, I wanted to talk a little bit about Blue Beetle Rebirth number one. In the Rebirth number one that came out to kick off this whole thing, my favorite part of that single issue was the Blue Beetle part. I thought it looked like it had like a ton of potential for what a Blue Beetle series could be. You know, one that includes, you know, Jaime Reyes in there, but also gets Ted Kord in there too. This Rebirth issue pays off on a lot of that potential. I feel like it does a lot of things that you know, page or two of Rebirth number one pulled off. Now, this is by Keith Gibbon and Scott Collins, with Giffen doing the script and Collins doing the art. It's got, you know, some really fun bad guy characters that show up in the on the first page, and then we get a little flashback to see, you know, Jaime Reyes' day-to-day life a little bit and what his relationship is with Ted Kord and how they're working together. And then we get a little bit more of those bad guys who we find out are named Rack and Ruin, which I think is some great, like, kind of ground-level thuggish villain types, right?
Pretty sure those are Transformers named Rack and Ruin.
Well, now they're also Blue Beetle villains. although, maybe there is a tie to Transformers based on a little twist that comes a little later in the issue for Rack and Ruin. There's a lot of stuff of kind of like Jaime not quite understanding his scarab and his Blue Beetle costume. Ted Kord's trying to figure it out too. There's some stuff where Dr. Fate shows up and says, you know, this stuff isn't what you think it is. And then we get a little, you know, final tease that shows something more sinister at play. I feel like this was a really fun kickoff to this idea for Blue Beetle and could be something really good. Real quick, I wanted to talk about one more book, and that is Six Pack Dog Welder number one. This is the new, I guess, kind of follow-up series to what Garth Ennis was doing with Section 8. And Chris, this is a weird-ass comic.
If you could go back like 10, 5, 2 years, and just be like, hey, DC's going to be putting out a comic with the word dog welder in the title one of these days.
Garth Ennis is still writing this. The art is now by Russ Braun. And it is a strange combination of stories. Dog Welder, who is a character from Hitman, who has an interesting history, has a story that's kind of played up for pathos, while Sixpack, the hard-drinking leader of Section 8, is basically in a bar for 16 pages, in a story that's more or less played for laughs. And then it all culminates with the Spectre showing up and threatening everybody. It is such a weird book. And it's such a kind of like a 1999 holdover being published in 2016, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but it's such a strange, like, Section 8 was weird when it started, and this is even weirder than that. And I don't know what else to say about it. Like, I'm glad Garth Ennis is getting to write the comics he wants to write. That's a guy who's worked hard enough and done enough good stories that he's earned it. It's just weird to me that this is the story he wants to do. I don't think it's bad. It's just really weird.
Well, I mean, like, again, the fact that a Dogwalder story exists here in 2016, it's one of the weirder things. Like, I want a time machine so I can go back and be like, hey, everybody here in 2004. Here's what's going on in comics in 2016. Sixpack and Dogwalder miniseries. Really controversial Flintstones book out from DC. And the Eradicator just ate Crypto.
That's going to do it for our comics segment. We're going to get into our interview with Kelly Thompson here in just a minute. But before we do that, Chris, it's time for us to talk a little bit about Loot Crate.
Let's do it, Matt. Let's talk about Loot Crate. Now, what is Loot Crate, Matt? I still don't have it after all these months.
Allow me to morph into more a more persuasive figure to give you some information about Loot Crate.
I really need some information.
I feel like, you know, me just telling you, like, it's easy, like, I'm, you know, sometimes I'm easy to shrug off, sometimes it's easy to not listen to me. People have been hearing me talk.
Water off my back.
That's right. So let me turn into a more persuasive figure, or put on the guise of a more persuasive figure to give you this information. Okay, Chris?
Okay, I'm ready.
Chris Sims, I'm here with a message for you right now about Loot Crate. Loot Crate is a way to prove that you're a human, that you got a big heart that pumps hot blood, that you like to eat, that you like to have children. And the September Loot Crate, Chris, it's going to tell you a lot that you need to know, because it's got a high octane theme. And as a human, you might like that high octane theme and what it's about with speed. I've had it with these people telling me that I can't have a Loot Crate with speed in it.
All right, Alex, let's tone it down a little bit. There's not the drug speed in the Loot Crate, okay? It's like themed around speed.
I know that. I didn't say there was the drug speed in there. They're just items from things that I love as a human, like Batman, Flash and Arrow from the CW, Battlestar Galactica, Iron Man, and Gone in 60 Seconds. But not all things can last when you're human. So on September 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific Time, this Loot Crate will not be available anymore. Cutoff will happen and it'll be over, and you won't be able to get that Loot Crate with that cool stuff in it, exclusive items, 6 to 8 exclusive items that you can't get anywhere else for less than $20 a month. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to go to lootcrate.com/warrocketajax and enter the code warrocketajax to save $3 off that subscription and get all that cool stuff you want from those cool franchises. Speed! Human! Blood!
Matt, can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah.
Did you say there was a Gone in 60 Seconds item in this loot crate?
I did.
Is that because this is a throwback? This is what it looks like when you get a Gone in 60 Seconds item from loot crate.
Yep, that's exactly what it is. I really hurt my throat doing that.
So I hurt my face from laughing.
I hurt my throat doing that, so please get a loot crate and don't make my sacrifice for nothing. Chris, let's talk to Kelly Thompson.
Oh, let's do it. For the program this week, somebody that I'm very excited to talk to, one of our faves, I would say, here at Comics Alliance. She's been on the show before, and you will know her as the writer of, I guess currently it's A-Force and Gem, but you've got a lot of stuff upcoming, including the recently announced Star Wars annual. You've got Misfits is coming up, and Mega Princess Kelly Thompson is here. Kelly, how are you?
I am so well. How are you guys?
I'm fine. I'm tired today.
I'm good. Right. I was great up until Chris got the name of the show wrong and called the show Comics Alliance.
When did I do that?
Just now.
Just now.
Did I literally? Oh, oops. I literally just said I was tired.
I forgive. I forgive, but I'll never forget.
So here on War Rocket Ajax, Kelly, we've had you on a couple times, right?
Yes, I have been on a few times.
So,
although, Matt, is it the first time I've been on with you?
I was on the first time. The second time,
And then it was
Elle had to be on because I had bad things happening in my life, and now I'm back.
Yeah, I will say when I emailed Kelly about coming back on the show, you were not excited to talk to me. You were just like, oh, is Elle there? Is Elle going to be around? And then
Listen. The email came from you. I knew you were going to be there. You were a given.
Yeah, whatever.
I figured Matt would be there, but I thought maybe Elle would come too.
So I told that to Elle, and I was like, yeah, we're basically BFFs.
You forgot Pink Ranger.
Oh, yeah, I forgot you were doing Pink.
That's fair because I'm not really on it anymore. I mean, you know how Brendan and I are still credited, but Teeny Howard has mostly taken over. So for the issues 3 through 5, she's kind of the lead there. So, but I still, you know, we plotted that all out. We came up with it. We're very proud of it. So there's that too.
I'm surprised I didn't mention that one because that's the one where as soon as I heard about it, I was up in your email wanting to talk about Power Ranger.
I feel like maybe I failed you if you forgot about it.
No, listen,
so
that's
I don't know.
One of the,
maybe we shouldn't talk about Pink Ranger.
That's one of the like three comics I'm actually current on. People who listen to the show.
Well, listen, all I know is I was like, when you said A-Force and Gem, I was like, wait, I can't. That's not enough money to live. I must be missing something. So, yeah.
Well, here's why I said Gem first. First, because I love Gem, as you know. I am a Gem guy, even though there's not a song about that. But you just recently did something in Gem that I wanted to talk about, and I think I'll lead off the interview with this. You're aware, I'm sure, of the Gem Jam podcast, because I know I've talked mm-hmm. about it before.
Yeah, I think I'm up to date on all the episodes. They're great. Yeah,
especially the ones where they just talk about how awesome your comic is. That must be...
Well, those are definitely my favorite, yeah. Yes.
I was just recently on an episode. Because when they started and the first time that Annie emailed me, I was like, okay, well, when you get to this episode, I want to be on. Which was the episode The Presidential Dilemma, where Jim fights a straight-up actual domino-masked supervillain who tries to kidnap the president and keep him in a museum.
Right.
Because that's the intersection between Jim and superheroics. But you
totally.
and Sophie Campbell – in the most recent story arc, the most recent completed story arc, I should say, you do a very superhero-y story up to and including introducing a supervillain with a plot to destroy the world, or at least a plot for world domination.
Totally. Totally. I mean, listen, Jem has, I mean, yes, it's all about girls and feelings and music and fashion and fame and whatever, but, you know, it's got sci-fi, super hardcore sci-fi roots, and, you know, how that's examined in the show is, like, sometimes they're sort of casual with it, and sometimes they're hardcore, like a time travel episode and, like, a, you know, kidnap the president episode and things. So, you know, we've been a little softer on the sci-fi, and so when Dark Jem came along, I mean, we really wanted to, like, pick it up. And, of course, superheroes are my, I don't know if they're my first love, but they'll probably be my last love. So, you know, I love digging into that aspect of Jem. And there are so many, like, parallels, you know, like the sort of alter ego and, you know, all that great stuff, and the celebrity and fame and superheroes, all that stuff is tied pretty tightly together thematically. So, you know, it's not really a stretch. And then you've got Sophie. So you're just like, hey, design the craziest, scariest, gothic, dripping nightmare person who's actually a hologram that we can get away with for small children, and let's fight her.
So was there any, like, is that something that you had to like run by Hasbro? Was there any resistance to that from editorial? Or were you just like, yeah, like, we're like, obviously there's going to be an evil synergy named Silica. Obviously this is going to happen.
Well, Dark Jem was actually, before we knew what the deal was with Hasbro, when we were still waiting for them to tell us we could even pitch, and we were like talking on our own, Dark Jem was the story we wanted to do, because we didn't know, are they going to make it like pick up 30 years later and they're not going to let us sort of reboot it? We had no idea. So that was the storyline we were first talking about. When we realized what they wanted and what that would entail, we knew we couldn't do that, it wouldn't make sense to do Dark Jem in that first arc. And so we kind of punted it for later. And it was actually going to come a few more issues later than where it actually ended up starting. But the way Sophie's schedule was, it ended up sort of hitting right as the third arc, as number 11. So they were, I mean, we did do a pitch for it. I mean, every time we have a new arc, I sort of do a pitch for what it's going to be about and what are the beats and everything. Because we had this really short arc for Jem that's just sort of a two-issue bridge arc, and then we have the stingers, like I put that pitch just sort of all in one document. But so, yeah, I mean, we did have to get it approved, but they were completely cool with it. I don't think they asked for any changes. They had a couple minor things with the art where they just felt something Sophie was doing was a little too scary once she like finished the page, and they're like, yeah, you gotta trim her nails or whatever. So there was a little stuff like that, but no, they were totally down for
it. Silica's really scary.
She's super scary. I mean, my friend's kid is, what is she, 6? And she's reading Jem, and she fucking loves it, and it's amazing, and it makes me so happy to know she's reading it. And when I left New York to move to Portland, I gave them, I think it was like the first 2 or 3 issues were out, and I was like, listen, I put these in a separate thing because you might want to look at them first, because I think they're sort of scary. I was like, I don't know like how she is with that. I was like, she's going to love them eventually, but she might not be ready for it right now. So I think it's totally scary. But Hasbro's been super crazy supportive, and IDW, of course, I'd expect no less. But not every sort of corporation who's expanding into other IP sort of gets it, and they love Jem. They're super supportive of it. We've had very few issues down the line, so we're very lucky.
Well, the one thing that really sticks out to me about Dark Jem more than anything else is that it's called Dark Jem. And I know you well enough at this point that I know you know that title is hilarious.
It's amazing. Like, it's completely hilarious.
Was there ever any moment where you were like, okay, what are we going to call this? Or was it always just Dark Jem? And when it came time to write the actual title, you're like, no, that's the title. That's it. This is Dark Jem.
I think it was that. Like, we were always talked about it being Dark Jem. And we're like, I mean, I even, when I was rewatching all the episodes for research and stuff, I happened to snap a picture, or I happened to pause the logo right at the time that the logo was all black in the animation. And so I like snapped a picture and sent it to Sophie. I was like, look, Dark Gem's calling to us. I mean, we just always called it that. And then like no one contested it. No one fought it because it's amazing. Why would they fight it? It's hilarious and amazing.
It's
funny though. That's one of the only things that like is a little nitpicky thing that they don't like that sort of drives me crazy is that they don't like it. Like, I wanted to do a little thing for an upcoming annual that was called Gems in Space, which is a play on, you know, things. But they don't want it to be called Gems. And it makes me infuriated because it's adorable. It's adorable to call them my little gems. I love them. And it makes me mad that they won't let me do it, but whatever.
Have you thought about pitching My Little Gems as a crossover?
Listen, I want House of Gem. I want Age of Gem. I want Crisis of Infinite Gems. Like, I want it all,
well,
man.
Well, with the you know, the calling them gems sort of evokes a Steven Universe-y thing. Do you see a lot of like crossover between, you know, your gym and then the crystal gems from Steven Universe, like within the fans?
If you go to Tumblr, you can definitely see like mashups and things and like a lot of people talking about them. And I think there's a ton of crossover in the fan base. And that may be why Hasbro, I tend to not think of them being that cognizant. It's just that it's not the official name, and so that's why they don't want it, and it's less to do with Steven Universe. But it could be. I mean, it could be. You never know. But to me, it's like, there's nothing wrong with leaning into Steven Universe. Like, that show is amazing. It's groundbreaking. It's incredible. Like, yes, associate us with that, please.
I know that since Revolution was announced, and I think you answered this question even today on your Tumblr, about whether Gem was going to be a part of it. Because when they announced Revolution, that was my first question. I got that news in advance.
Oh, the crossover?
Yes.
Literally, someone just popped up in my Twitter feed with it. Did IDW consider including Gem in the big crossover? I think a synergy versus Decepticons would be amazing. yes, you're right. I did answer it. I just didn't think... I don't know. Maybe I dismissed it too quickly because a lot of people really wanted to see us. And I think there's certainly value to the quote girl property, you know, not playing with the boy properties. Like, I don't like that segregation, and maybe I should have thought about that more. But when John Barber, the former editor of Gem, when he and I talked about it, we just didn't really feel like it got us that much, you know? It got us, like, Easter eggs and some cameos and things, and ha-ha, that's funny and that's cute. But it hurt us, I felt like, because Gem exists in a very real world at this point. You know, superheroes don't really exist. I mean, you know, Kimber makes a reference to Iron Man in the first issue, but... is she talking about a real Iron Man, or is she just talking about a movie she saw about Iron Man? And like, that's a thing that somebody could do, and it would be amazing if her dad was secretly like an Iron Man, right? So having the Gem world exist in a world where something as crazy as like Transformers, for example, exists, really lessens our concept. Like, it takes the stakes of synergy and AI and hologram technology down so low if all that stuff already exists and is out there in the world. And I just didn't think it was worth it for us.
Okay, well, there's two things I want to talk to you about. First of all, I think you're right. I think that your book works really well isolated from everything else, which is not my usual view on things. Like, you know that I'm a continuity dope. Like, I'm someone who loves seeing the ways things get put together, but especially with the aftermath of Dark Gem and that last issue, and the conversation about why Gem can't tell Rio, which is the which is again my only huge problem with the original cartoon, is that there's no reason for Jericho to have a secret identity at all. So I like that being in place in the book, But that said, there's a couple things. Have you read any of the Transformers series, More Than Meets the Eye?
Just dabbled. I wouldn't say that I'm well up to speed at all. Okay. No.
The only reason I bring it up is because there's a plot point in a few issues about Hollow Matter avatars, which is that the Transformers can project holograms of what they would look like as humans.
That's awesome.
As soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, it's like Jim. It's like these Transformers are all Jim. Awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome. I will tell you, and this is sort of a secret-y thing, so I can't say too much, but there is something on the horizon that IDW and I really, really want to do that I would say, quote, is a crossover event in its own way. It's like a big summer event kind of thing. And I don't know if IDW is going to go for it because I think they're going to feel it's very different than a lot of things we've been doing. But I don't know if Hasbro is going to go for it, but IDW and I are very excited about it and want to do it. And it would really be a chance to take like all the sort of really sci-fi craziness to a really far-reaching conclusion and see a really different side of the Gem world. And I hope we get to do that because I'd love to sort of play in that pool, you know? You know, it was also a thing with the timing, like the way it was working out with the crossover, the things we were trying to set up. Like, I didn't want to push off Stingers, you know, for longer. I don't know. It just didn't fold in very naturally to me when we talked about it.
Well,
so
the second thing that I want to talk about, this is my guess, and you have to tell me if I guess it. That's the rules. You're on Rock Ajax.
Okay.
When Revolution was announced, and I got the press release to write it up before San Diego, they specifically said it's the following Hasbro properties. It's Transformers, G.I. Joe, ROM, Action Man, Micronauts, and I think there might be one more in there. The Mask and Mask. And the first thing I did was email back, and I was like, well, there are three other Hasbro properties. There's Jim. There's My Little Pony, and there's Dungeons and Dragons. Is there going to be a separate secondary Revolution that combines all three of those into the same world?
That would be amazing. I could fit us into the Dungeons and Dragons My Little Pony world a lot easier in my mind. It would still be crazy, but I could make it happen. Yeah, I really feel like, I mean, not that I know everything about Transformers, but in my mind, it's Transformers that's the biggest problem for Jem. You know? I just think it takes all the wind out of our sails. You know, if you've got these crazy machines that can do this, and they're, I mean, I guess you don't call them AI because they're aliens, mm-hmm. right? But for people, it presents as AI, right? I mean, that's how it feels in a lot of ways because they're machines that think and talk and, you know, whatever. And I just think that's a big problem for us.
Yeah, I think it's probably easier. And I think this gets back to what you were saying about the idea of the you know, stereotypical, you know, quote-unquote boy properties versus the stereotypical quote-unquote girl properties. Is that when you have the, you know, everything else is kind of going to Transformers because Transformers has that thing in its history of Megatron invading Earth and killing a billion people. And so everything that's not an action story is way less fun in that world.
Right.
And so with Jem, even though you've got, you know, a lot of action in that book, and Silica is a scary supervillain character. It's still at heart like a book about glamour and glitter and fashion and fame.
Yeah, I mean, it defaults, you know, when I write an issue of A-Force, it's like nobody tells you to write this many pages of action, but you just know instinctively, like, there's this much balance of action. And when I'm writing a Gem book, that action turns into mostly music scenes or, you know, whatever, or a combination of music and action and intrigue or whatever, like some combo, right? And it's just not, I mean, action fits in there. We certainly try to keep the stakes high and like give ourselves cliffhangers and things. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's nobody running around. It's most of the time not saving the world stuff, you know?
Most of the time.
And that's why Gem was fun. It was fun to do Gem and do Save the World things, and I'd like to do that again. The big problem we have, which I hope we're really solving a little bit with Misfits, is it's just so many characters now. You know, I just wrote an issue of Gem that bounces between Gem, Misfits, and Stingers, and I really like the issue, but, you know, I said, when I sent the script into Sarah, I was like, so I really like this, let me know what you think. I was like, it's a little choppy, but honestly, there's nothing I see we can do about that, because we have to spend time with Misfits, we have to keep all, we're at the middle of the arc, so we have to keep all these balls in the air, and it's like, there are scenes with Stingers, there are scenes with Misfits, there are scenes with, you know, Gem, and then there's also Shayna is in Milan, so, you know, it's like, everyone's sort of bouncing around, so it's tough, and by putting Misfits and giving them their own books, we sort of, it's not going to really separate them, it's just going to sort of double our pages, even though they're not crossing over, technically, it just gives us more room to breathe, you know?
What's the reaction been as far as all the new stuff that you've introduced to Gem? You know, because specifically, you know, and spoiler warning for people who haven't finished Dark Gem yet, when you finally introduce Rhea and the Stingers, Rhea's in the Stingers. But more than that, even, there's Blaze, who's, you know, an original character for the comic, who is now a full-fledged Misfit.
I mean, people have been, you know, we have a really great fan base, and people are really excited about Blaze for a lot of reasons, including she's a trans character and Sophie is a trans woman, and so it's a big deal. And, you know, we didn't get it maybe exactly right, which is upsetting to both of us, but I think we came pretty close, and you know, it's important to get that kind of representation out there. And for the most part, except for, you know, there's always a handful of toxic people, but except for those people, it's been really supportive. And, you know, Blaze was an idea very early on, before we even knew who she was Sophie saying fifth Misfit. Like, she would just say fifth Misfit all the time. And I'm like, all right, we'll get there. So that was sort of how we knew we wanted a fifth Misfit, and that's how Blaze sort of got developed and came to be. Rhea was also Sophie's idea. It's just coming out that all the good ideas are Sophie's. In fact, Rhea as a Stinger was something Sophie said, and I was like, ha ha, that's dumb. And then I thought about it for 2 minutes, and I was like, wait, no, that's fucking great. I'm an idiot. That solves so many of our problems because, you know, it's so telegraphed if we bring Rhea in and she's just, you know, oh, she'll be the drummer eventually. That's what it'll be. And even if we're going to get there, like, you know, you want the story to have stakes and be earned and feel real and have surprises to it, you know? So this was a great way to do that. I hope it's going to show a really different side of Rhea because I feel like Rhea is really underserved in the show. You know, the show had a lot of the same problems we have. It's so many characters. Like, there's only so much you can do in so little time. And, you know, Rhea came on a bit late. And so she's just not as well developed as some of the other characters, I think. This is going to give us an opportunity, I think, to give her some interesting dimension and to sort of show contrast. Like, she's in the Stingers and she's awesome, but, you know, it's also maybe not so perfect a fit for her, and like, she knows it, you know.
Kelly, I know that the two of you could talk about Gem for many hours, but we have limited time, and I feel like we have to talk about your news. You've got a lot of other stuff going on with A-Force and Pink and all that cool stuff, but the big news, your pinned tweet is about how you're writing Star Wars Annual Number 2, which is going to be coming out in November.
So exciting, you guys. So exciting.
Princess Leia story. I would just like to hear about how that came about.
I mean, I think a lot of it was sort of right place, right time. I had been talking to Heather Antos, who's the assistant editor. I'd been talking to her about some things, and we ended up having a sort of funny conversation on Twitter about Star Wars, and I had sent her some of my stuff, And I was like, you know, I'd love to do some Star Wars work, or I'd love to do any work. She, you know, she does some X-Men stuff. You guys know Heather, right? I don't know. I think they just had an opening and I was on her mind. And, you know, if I'm honest, it probably doesn't hurt in this case. It often does hurt that I'm a woman. So in this case, it probably didn't hurt because I feel like, you know, they haven't had a lot of women writers. So I think they probably, you know, were happy to expand the field a little bit in that way. That's a guess, though. No one said that to me. I'm just guessing. So they let me pitch. And, you know, it was very much a thing where I dropped everything else that I was doing that I probably shouldn't have dropped because it put me back even further behind everything that was due. And I just powered through. I'd already read a lot of the books, but I wanted to make sure I didn't screw up the pitch. So I like read everything that had come out so far, even stuff that wasn't in the main Star Wars series, because I didn't want to duplicate anything, you know, that they'd already done. So that then they're like, yeah, we've done all these pitches already last year, you know? So I did a ton of research and then I just pulled together a couple pitches and they liked two of them to send on to Lucasfilm, and you sort of go through the process there. And then they came back with the one they liked, and it was the one I wanted to do anyway, which is always nice when it works out that way. And yeah, that was it. And so then I went right to work because it was due very quickly. So the idea that I get to create a canon character, that not only do I get to write Leia, but I get to create a new canon character for Star Wars. That's insane and it's amazing. And so, of course, I created a giant buff chick with huge shoulders who likes to hit people with bricks because if I'm going to get to contribute to Star Wars, that's what it will be.
I think that will be a great contribution to the Star Wars universe. But I don't want to project on you, and forgive me if I am, but you know, the fact that you got to pitch this and it wasn't an assignment, I think probably made it less daunting. But was there at any point in the process, you know, where just like the weight of I'm writing the comic that's called Star Wars, during, you know, did you get kind of hit over the head with that? Was there a point where it was just like, so
that absolutely happened, but I think I had the advantage of the terror of how fast I had to turn the work around, for not as much the script, but also the script, but especially the pitch. Like if I had had more time, I think I would have gotten really hung up on that and really scared and sort of psyched myself out. But I had to do so much reading and think about it so much and so hard. And it was like, I mean, I can't remember the dates exactly, but it was like we talked on like a Thursday and like they really needed the pitches by like Monday. And I knew I had to read like 800 comics or something, reread like 800 comics or something crazy. It was, I think it ended up being like in 2.5 days, I read or reread almost 1600 pages of Star Wars comics. So like I was so in it, you know, that it was sort of like a lucky thing. Cause if I'd had more time to think about it, I would have freaked out a lot more, I think.
Chad can never hear this interview. Cause if he hears that you read that much Star Wars comics in 2 days, he's like, I'm going to hear about me having never read Generation X for a week.
Yeah, but you already had the job. That's the difference. I didn't want to fuck it up. I was like, this is my chance. And I not only want to write the Star Wars annual, I want to do it so well that they'll let me write my Han and Leia miniseries I want to do, you know? So it was like, not only is this the lifetime opportunity, but I want it to be a gateway drug to an even bigger lifetime opportunity. I'm very greedy. So I was very determined, and I was very determined that the pitches would be good and that it wouldn't be like, oh yeah, you know, and then next thing I know, I'm not writing it. So it was a big moment for me. It was also the coolest thing I've ever been able to tell my brother, by the way, because he is hardcore Star Wars. And I felt a little bad telling him because I knew there was probably some jealousy too, but he was so awesome and proud of me and it was really awesome. So
is there, of all the stuff you've written, like, is that the one where it's the most, like, oh, hey, I'm working on this thing that I love?
Yeah, I mean, I think Star Wars has been the biggest thing so far, for sure, in, like, if you step outside of it for a second, the scope of it just blows your mind, and you're like, oh my god. But, you know, it was, that thing was sort of worse for me on Gem, just because when I took Gem on, I was sort of a nobody in comics. Like, Heart in a Box was done, and it was going to come out, but it wasn't out, and very few people knew me except for from my novels, and that was seemed very unrelated. And so here I was doing this thing, and there was a huge PR push, and there was all this stuff about it, and I was like, holy crap, I'm responsible for building this whole world, and not only building it, but taking what's already been done and being respectful with it and reinterpreting it in a way that still, like, honors it, but is, you know, that was a lot. That felt like a lot of responsibility. There were time, and that took a lot longer too, because it was a lot bigger job. So there was a lot more time on that one to, like, think about it. And, like, sometimes it seemed so terrifying, I sort of couldn't even look at it. I was like, oh, I can't think about that, or I'm going to freak out. So that one was worse in that regard, but Star Wars was definitely a bigger thing. But Star Wars, I also think, because I had to do it so fast, you know, I mean, this is less than a month from the first time I talked to Jordan and Heather to I just turned in the second revision of the script. So, like, very tight timeline.
And okay, Jordan and Heather can also not hear about that? Because then they'll get, then everybody's going to be mad at me.
Well, I mean, but that's how it works if you want to get jobs, not if you already have the job, right? I mean, I'm sure my Gem editors are like, screw you, Kelly, I know you put Star Wars Annual 30 pages of it in front of the Gem deadline, right? And I totally did, because you sort of have to do that sometimes to get the jobs you want, unfortunately, and hopefully you can juggle it enough that nobody gets super mad at you. But yeah, so it was very fast. I think when that one comes out, or maybe when I'm editing the PDF and we have the art and everything, like, that will be, like, a for real surreal moment. Like, what?
We've talked a lot about Gem, and I wish we had more time to talk about everything. But there was one other upcoming project that I really wanted to talk to you about, which is Mega Princess.
Woo!
Because I am a huge, huge fan of Brienne Droward. Our listeners will probably know her best as the animator responsible for the Amethyst Princess of Gemworld shorts that were on Cartoon Network a couple years ago.
So good.
Ridiculously good. And you sent over some, what is this? Is this just like production sketches and concept art?
It's a mock-up of the cover. I don't think it's totally finalized, but it's close to the cover. And then it's some of her, like, process sketches and some of the character designs. And I think there are sketches and covers for issues 2 and 3 there. So it's just a bunch of fun stuff, you know. She's so fucking good. It's absurd. Like, you see her work and you're like, you should be a millionaire. Why are you just rolling in Scrooge McDuck money? And she's like, no, it's hard to make my rent. And you're like, oh yeah, we're artists. Like, forget it. You know, she's so good. I can't even tell you, like, that the pony in the Mega Princess. So it's sort of Mega Princess and Mega Pony. Not that either of them want to go by those names. And they're sort of frenemies, I would call them. Justine and Max is the princess and Justine is the pony. And, when she draws Justine with, like, these sarcastic, salty expressions, and she's, like, making all these comments, like, I'm, like, laughing out loud over these expressions on this fucking pony. It's insane. It's so good. It's so much better than I deserve. I mean, like, I think Mega Princess is a great idea, and it's a cute script, but, like, it's so much better than I deserve to have Brienne.
Take us through the premise. Give us a quick version of the pitch here.
Max is a princess who wants to be a detective and sort of very not girly. And on her 10th birthday, she gets something that basically gifts her the powers of all princesses everywhere. So Mega Princess, but what does that mean? What do princesses in stories have the powers? So it's like really worthless shit, like perfect pitch, and the ability to dance well, and to be fair as the day is long. And, you know, like, it's really dumb shit. Like, oh, feel a pee through 20 mattresses and things. So it's all about her, you know, and she wants like superpowers. Like there's a great page in the first issue with her asking what these powers are going to be and like acting out what she thinks they should be. And, or she would like them to be detective related powers. And the fairy godmother's like, whatever, like these are the powers, you know, but a good power that she has is she can talk to this pony now, Justine, because she can understand animals because some princesses can do that. And, you know, so stuff like that. So, you know, it's all about her. So the first arc is about her brother gets kidnapped and it's about her trying to find her brother using her detective powers and her sort of learning how to merge her detective self that she likes with these powers and these princess abilities that she finds kind of useless.
Now, does she also get any like political power to govern a principality?
Eventually, I'm sure, but she hasn't figured that one out yet. You saw in there, but she designed like cardboard armor for her pony. And that gets made real in the first issue. So Mega Pony can do all these cool things like, I mean, you know, Max hates her name and wants to call her Leviathan. So she has like battle mode and like all these funny buttons that now work. So it's pretty fun.
Has she read any Machiavelli? That's the big question.
She's more into like Sherlock Holmes and, you know, murder mystery detective stories right now. But she'll get there.
All right. We'll get to Twitter questions in 1 second. But before we do, Kelly, I have a gotcha question for you.
Oh, God.
I'm going to use your words against you. This is a tweet that you sent just before we started recording at approximately 6 p.m. Pacific time. Man, I wanted to take a nap before Warrock and Ajax recording with the ISB and the Matt D. Wilson, but I dicked around on Twitter too much. Capital T underscore capital T. Now, here's my question. It's about naps. Can you nap and wake up in the dark and feel refreshed? Because that is the worst thing on earth to me.
I have an awesome sleeping schedule that I would never advocate this for anyone else because I think everybody's different. It's sort of like, you know, whatever. They say something new every year about diet or health or sleeping or how many hours you should get or whatever. So none of it matters. But I have found for me, I read this article about the 90-minute sleep cycle and that your body naturally is in a 90-minute cycle. And so I was like, well, let me try that out. Let me see if that's true for me. And so I just went through a period of letting myself just wake up naturally. And I wake up very naturally in like 90-minute increments. And so if I get up when I wake up naturally, if I can tag it so that even if it's only 6 hours of sleep or only 3 hours of sleep, if I can wake up naturally, I'm pretty refreshed. It's awesome. And since I'm a freelancer, if I'm smart about my time, I can do that so that I don't have to have an alarm. Like I can set a backup alarm in case something goes wrong, but I can just let myself wake up by myself. It's awesome. So yes, I could take a nap. And as long as I woke up at the end of a 90-minute cycle, could be anything outside. It could be the apocalypse outside. And I'd be like, wow, I'm really refreshed.
I envy that. We'll have to talk about the freelancer sleep cycle in a future episode.
The freelancer sleep cycle is the motorcycle that comes with my action figure. It's a big comfy bed on two giant wheels. All right. Well, now is the time of the interview where we kick it over to our listeners to ask you some questions over Twitter. Matt, if people want to get in on these conversations that we have each and every week here on Warrock and Ajax, how exactly can they go about that?
Well, all they need to do is jump on their own freelancer sleep cycles, ride it on down to their local Twitter headquarters, and fill out the appropriate paperwork to sign up for an account on Twitter.com. Follow the Matt D. Wilson, that's me, and the ISB, that's Chris. One of us will put out the call for questions on Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 6:30 Pacific. And that will be your opportunity to ask a question, just like the listener questions you're about to hear, for Kelly Thompson. And the first one we're going to take is from Barely Sushi on Twitter, Mike Donahue. He asks, what four musicians from any real band would you put up against the holograms in a battle of the bands?
See, I think this is tough because I don't know. Maybe this is just very embarrassing, but I don't know that I know a ton of drummers. Like, I mean, yeah, Neil Peart, right? Like, how many drummers do I know by name? I don't know. But besides for Gem and the Holograms, I feel like their competitors are like Katy Perry, Beyonce, for Misfits, maybe Paramore, the band. Those are more like solo artists with incredible like backup dancers and things. So I don't know that I could just off the top of my head come up with an actual band made up of the instruments that we have. Plus, nobody plays a fucking guitar anymore. So
I think it's more than acceptable to assemble a supergroup of just singers.
I mean, can you imagine how rough a supergroup of Beyonce and Katy Perry and, I don't know, Nicki Minaj, like, I mean, I just feel like it would be really hard for those gals to like get together and coordinate. I mean, they're all superstars. How do you make them be in a group?
It would be quite the daunting task.
Yeah. So that's my sort of bullshit answer. Sort of a cop-out, I'm sorry.
Our next question is from Discord_Inc, who has another hypothetical Jim question for you. What fictional country would you love the Misfits and the Holograms to tour?
Well, there's the fictional country in the show. What is it? Latveria?
No, that's something a different like that. Fictional country, Kelly. That's where Dr. Jim lives.
Oh, yes, you're right. What's the name of the one in Jim?
You talking about the one from The Princess and the Singer?
Yeah, from The Princess, where it's the duplicate Kimber, like the Kimber lookalike.
I don't remember the name, because it's like, it's one of those names.
Monrovia or something?
Yeah, it's like Monrovia or Markovia or one of those weird names where it's like, it's every foreign country in the 80s had that name. So I don't remember it off the top.
Yeah, I would want it to be that one, but I'm very embarrassed to say I don't remember the name of it.
Now, would you like to see the Holograms touring Latveria, since you brought it up?
That would be amazing. I feel like they would either accidentally get killed or accidentally kill, like, Doom or something crazy.
I think they'd get there.
Jesus, Doom.
I think they'd get there and find that the audience for their show is comprised of one person.
And that's Victor Von Doom,
who wants a personal show.
Yeah, I do not think that would satisfy Pizzazz.
All right, our next question comes from, let me set the stage, an account that only tweets at us. It exists to ask questions on War Rocket Ajax. It has never tweeted anything else, except for an explanation for the HCC and its name, Chris.
Yo, I saw.
Which you asked for last week. This is Stone Cold HCC on Twitter. They have a picture of Stone Cold Steve Austin as their avatar. And it's a two-part question. The first tweet is, where do babies come from? And the second part, he added an addendum, which is, and none of that stork bullcrap, okay?
I mean, it sounds like Chris should answer this question.
If I would suggest that Stone Cold HCC ask his parents or an adult he trusts.
Yeah, I maybe a teacher you trust. That would be good,
Matt,
too.
Yeah,
Matt, but what if you don't trust anybody?
Oh, no, DTA.
Trust the internet. That's always my answer. The internet won't lead you wrong unless you read the comments.
That's right. The next question we have comes from a recent guest on the show, Jeremy Whitley.
Morvania, by the way. Morvania.
Morvania. There we go.
It's rough.
I know Markovia is a DC thing.
Yeah, Markovia is where Geoforce is from.
Yeah. Jeremy Whitley at JRome58, recent guest on the show, His question is, what Marvel character would you like to give a truly outrageous makeover?
I mean, I would have said Dazzler, but we fucking took care of that to the max. you know, and Storm is rocking a really great mohawk or sort of. I mean, I'd love to see Storm with the, like, Afro mohawk instead of the straight hair, but, you know, whatever. I mean, Psylocke probably needs another makeover. Her new outfit's not that bad, though. I'm not reading the book, but I saw it here and there. Maybe I'm focusing on chicks too much. Maybe a dude needs a super makeover. I mean, you know who could use a great makeover is your boy Gambit.
I think he could use a make-under, which is where they take him back to that 90s outfit. But that's just me.
I mean, listen, I have a huge love in my heart for that 90s outfit. Massive. It will never go away. He was an early crush for sure. But, you know, I'd like to see him taken a little more seriously sometimes. I want him to be making the jokes, not be a joke. And people don't take him seriously. How can we make that happen? Maybe a makeover is the way to go. I've lost right. Chris. We're no longer friends.
Our next question is from Mike Pankowski on Twitter. Mike wants to know, who's the better archer, Kate Bishop or the Pink Ranger?
I gotta go with Kate. You know, Pink Ranger's very good, but she's a gymnast. She's also got, you know, crazy Zord stuff going on. Later in the show, she barely uses the archery at all. So I gotta go with Kate. That's Kate's main thing.
I think this is gonna be our last question. We had a few more, but this one's gonna have to wrap us up. This one comes from Tyler Javier on Twitter. Tylo Ren. He asks, who are you dying to have join A-Force?
Oh man, I have a whole big list. Can I give us the whole list? I have Black Widow, America Chavez for sure. Ms. Marvel would be super fun for an arc. Squirrel Girl would be super fun for an arc. Valkyrie would be a riot. I love Armor like crazy. Nobody seems to care about her. I love her so much. Storm would be awesome on there. You could also, I mean, I would love to write a story where Mystique had to come on the team for some reason, and we could like deal with the Dazzler Mystique stuff. I would love that. Plus, I always love like some oil and water with the characters. That's why it's so fun to have Elsa on there right now. You know, she's very difficult and doesn't make things easy. So, I mean, so many people. Oh, Laura Wolverine would be great. So many good characters, so little time.
Too many to name, but we got a few, and that's good.
Yeah, I got a bunch.
Kelly Thompson, thank you so much for coming on War Rocket Ajax once again. It has been a delight to talk to you, as always. Before we wrap up, please let all our listeners know where they can find you online.
You guys can find me on Twitter, at 79semifinalist, and my Tumblr, which I try really hard to be good at, but I'm just not good at it, is 1979semifinalist.tumblr.com. That's probably it.
Our guest has been Kelly Thompson. So much great stuff. Literally anything with your name on it is a quality comic. So everybody, head to your local shop, head to Comixology, check out Gem, check out A-Force, check out Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, Pink, check out the upcoming Mega Princess, all that good stuff. Story Killer, go pick that up. That book's awesome. Kelly, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, guys. I had a great time.
Thanks once again to Kelly Thompson for joining us on the show. Definitely go check out her stuff. It's amazing. But now it's time for the tables to turn as Matt and I answer questions from you, the listener.
This question is from Tumblr. And it's from AWA64. They want to know about what is in our heads when we're reading comics. Their questions, they have several questions, actually. The first one is, whose voice do you hear in your head when you read Batman dialogue?
Kevin Conroy, always.
Me too. Whose voice do you hear in your head when you read Wolverine dialogue?
Well, It's usually me or Chad doing an impression of the Wolverine from the animated series, because that's when I hear Wolverine dialogue these days.
Yeah,
Chad and I do a lot of out loud talking while we write.
In a certain context, I definitely hear the animated series Wolverine in my head, but more often than not, it's more of just kind of like a low growly voice. It's not any specific voice. Because honestly, like, there are not as many Wolverine voices as there are Batman voices from, you know, the culture at large. And in some contexts, I'm not going to hear animated series Wolverine, who I think fits a very specific Wolverine context, where he says bub a lot. And I'm not going to hear Hugh Jackman probably ever.
Yeah.
And I haven't watched a lot of other X-Men cartoons, so I can't hear those Wolverine voices in my head. So I kind of have to just create my own. And then AWA64 actually asks, does it ever differ depending on art style or continuity?
If I'm reading, like, Batman 66, then I will hear Adam West's voice. I will say, like, there is a Bob Haney Batman voice, like a Brave and the Bold Batman voice, that is unique. It is not Kevin Conroy. I cannot imagine Kevin Conroy saying the phrase, check, Plastic Man, now let's highball it to the sunshine state. As Batman says in an issue of Brave and the Bold. Like, that is just a Bob Haney voice that's actually the same as the Metamorpho voice that I hear in my head.
I don't know. I don't always hear Kevin Conroy necessarily, but he's kind of my baseline Batman voice for sure. Okay, one more quick question. This is from Lost Limey, and it is another Tumblr question. Lost Limey asks, who is the most underrated artist of the bronze and modern ages of comics, and why is it Dave Cockrum?
You know, that's a good question. And this is weird for being a dude who likes X-Men and Legion of Superheroes as much as I do. I'm not like a huge Dave Cockrum guy. You know?
I mean, he was good. I feel like it's so weird that John Byrne gets all the attention and love that he does, and Dave Cockrum gets basically none.
Well, Byrne's on there for Dark Phoenix, is the thing. Yeah. And Byrne was really good at drawing comic books at one time in his life.
Sure, but Dave Cockrum wasn't bad. Dave Cockrum was good.
Dave Cockrum's not bad. That's why Dave Cockrum gets a second run after Byrne splits. But, you know, I think that run really hits its stride with Byrne.
We've talked about this underrated artist before, and I feel like he's somebody that is never brought up, but he has so many great runs and drew so many great comics, and that's Paul Smith.
Paul Smith is pretty good. Paul Smith is good, and nobody talks about Paul Smith. That is correct. There's so many, though. Like, Ernie Chan is an amazing artist. Frank Robbins is really, really good. Obviously, like, my pick for, like, even though I think he's a lot of people's definitive Batman artist, like, I think it's bananas that Neil Adams gets all the attention for 70s Batman and Jim Aparo doesn't. Because, you know, Jim Aparo was on those books all the time. you know, and I think, you know, it, going back just a little bit, because he was still active up into the 80s, but, like, I'm the guy with the unpopular opinion that Kurt Schaffenberger is better than Kurt Swan, you know?
I mean, by that same token, Ross Andrew, I feel like, is somebody that gets overlooked a lot, even though he had been around pre-Bronze Age, really.
Mm-hmm.
I think he really came into the public perception in the Bronze Age. He had, you know, he did his Spider-Man work then. And Ross Andrew was always so good.
Yeah, Ross Andrew's really good. Yeah, I mean, like, a lot of really, really solid 70s guys that you don't hear a lot about. I mean, I would say, honestly, I would probably say, like, Ernie Chan's the most underrated.
Yeah, you don't hear a ton about Ernie Chan, and he was so good.
So good, and had to do that weird thing where he had to sign his name wrong for, like, 5 years. That was really weird.
Yeah.
But, you know.
So, a lot
solid,
of candidates.
Solid stuff. Yeah.
A lot of candidates.
I'll tell you who the most underrated artist of the 90s is. is fucking John Bogdanov.
I thought you might hit me with a Rick Leonardi.
I do like Rick Leonardi. What about Tom Grummet?
Tom Grummet is great.
Tom Grummet's fucking awesome, dude.
Yeah.
I know I've been reading a lot of 90s Superman books lately, but like it's amazing. And look, they were the Superman books, so I know they sold quite a few comics. But it's amazing that those Superman books from like the early to like up to 1998 were not like huge sellers. Because like John Bogdanov's great, Tom Grummet's great, Stuart Eminem is like drew a lot of Superman comics in the late 90s, and they look amazing. Like, you know, even apart from Dan Jurgens, like give me that Tommy G.
Yeah, that Tommy G. Love that Tommy G. All right. That's going to do it for our listener question segment. Thanks for both of those questions. If you would like to ask us a question on Tumblr, you can do so by going to our Tumblr, which is warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. You can also send listener questions to our email address, which is warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. That is also where you can send every story ever lists. It's where you can send panel president lists. It's where you can send, if you just have a comment, if you just want to talk to us, you can email us. If you want to sponsor the show, you can let us know right there on our email. Check out our website. If you go to warrocketajax.com, you'll find the Every Story Ever list, the panel president list, the now historic Word Heavyweight Champions list. You can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments there. Also, check us out on iTunes. If you like the show, leave us a review on iTunes, please. The more reviews we get that are positive, the more we are featured. And now, we've reached the part of the show where we tell you all the different places you can find us online. For me, all you have to do is go to about.me/MattDWilson. That's where you'll find links to my Twitter, my Tumblr, and my books on Amazon. You can also go to comixology.com and read the comic that I make with artist Kevin Warren, Copernicus Jones, Robot Detective. Chris, where can people find your stuff?
People can find all of my stuff at about.me/ChrisSims. That's ChrisSims currently. But if you prefer a more direct way, I'm on Twitter and Tumblr as the ISB. That's TheIsb. Let's see. I also have comics that are available for you. X-Men 92 is ongoing from Marvel, and you can find it at Comixology or at your local store. And if you would pick it up, that would be awesome of you. I was also on a recent episode of the Gem Jam podcast, which I mentioned in the interview. You can find that by looking for the Gem Jam on iTunes or Stitcher, I think. Stitcher? Stitcher's around, right, Matt?
Stitcher is around.
Stitcher. People love Stitcher. People do not like iTunes. I do, though. I think iTunes is just fine. That's it. That's where you can find me. Go read my comics. I'll be on a cruise in January. Come see me on a boat. That does it for War Rocket Ajax, episode 319. Matt, letter grade for this one.
S?
Yeah, there we go. There we go. S rank. Have a great week, everybody.
Yeah! From this day on.